Blog Talk Radio.
He became famous as a war resister during the Vietnam War
and sold out his country and fellow soldiers, famously calling them war criminals. How can any voting American over 30 years of age not remember this cowardly, cringing clown who conceded the 2004 election to G.W. Bush? After it was known and reported worldwide of excessive GOP election fraud, Kerry actually won the election by over 3 million uncounted votes of Americans who despised G.W. Bush and wanted to end the Iraq and Afghanistan war. Now they despise John Kerry for selling out the country. I wrote about this and published an article on this site when Kerry was nominated for Secretary of Defense by Syria and stated that he was a traitor and would betray our country again. In his speech of 8th of August 2013, he betrayed the American people again by his support of war with Syria. How can anyone believe a war resister now turned warmonger? I must close this article now before I say any more that might offend the administration further. They are trying and have succeeded in arresting, censoring, and harassing people who are speaking out against Obama and his horror of an administration. Now that our Congress is not any better, but Obama doesn't listen to Congress or to the American people. He is a dictator and has taken his right to be won by the aid of Congress, who have given away their powers to declare war by passing G.W. Bush's Patriot Act. So, my friends, if Obama strikes Syria in the next few days, this may be censored to the world. Kerry recently stated in a news conference that it is virtually impossible to govern with an uncensored internet. And the reason is no government can keep its secret anymore and are losing control. Zbigniew Brzezinski, National Security Advisor under Jimmy Carter and Foreign Affairs Advisor for Obama, stated last year at a trilateral commission meeting that it is easier today to kill 1 million people than it is to control them. And people around the world are awakening by new knowledge acquired via the internet and are extremely angry at how they are being deceived for so long by their governments. Soon the world will either bow down to dictators like Obama, or all dictators will fall, and the world will be free of tyranny. All people around the world must pray and fight for the end of religious and political tyranny and war. But that was kind of an interesting concept. Pray to end the end of religious and political tyranny. Yeah. Folks, we have power. We have a great power. And that power is a meditation. Yeah. Prayer. So, anyway, let me move on, folks. MoveOn.org. That's the one thing I enjoy doing, is moving on. On September 2nd, I wrote this, and it's called The Flood Zone. Yeah, and it's very short, but what it states is that Obama publicly stated he will flood the zone to put tremendous pressure on Congress and the American people to accept his great lie about the Syrian government using chemical weapons on its people. This is the same lie G.W. Bush used against Saddam Hussein in 2003 to attack Iraq. Obama must be an idiot of the highest order. He can't understand the word no. He will be defeated and humiliated by the American people and by leaders around the world. If I am calling Obama an idiot, I can only imagine what the rest of the world is calling him. He will fall on his face at the upcoming G20 summit. And he will be seen as a fool, as stupid as G.W. Bush is, and even more incompetent and dangerous than G.W. Bush was. May God help America before Obama completely destroys this country. And I wrote that on September 2nd. Now, it's amazing how the news media doesn't even talk about Syria anymore. And the White House brings absolutely no mention of Syria anymore, or that debate, or that problem. You don't hear about it anymore. It's totally gone from the national dialogue. So, but on September 3rd, which is only a month ago, 30 days ago, I wrote this article. It's called Barack Obama and John Kerry, the madmen of U.S. foreign policy. Barack Obama and John Kerry are the terrible two of foreign policy. These two historical figures are more of a farce than a threat to anyone, and are considered as such by the American people and the rest of the world. We have to stop kidding ourselves and end this stupid farce of a horror show promoted as the retaliation for Syria's use of chemical weapons. By this threat of attacking Syria, Obama has made a fool of himself and has tried to make John Kerry his boogeyman. John Kerry has no credibility and scares himself more than anyone else. He is a buffoon of the highest order of skull and bones. I warned my readers of Kerry's nomination when it happened. Read the results of his nomination as Secretary of State. No one takes him seriously. His bravado is like the bass singer in a comedic opera. Is a papier-mâché puppet held up by his New World Order puppet masters. Obama is beyond his own ability to mask his incompetence and must put up Kerry as the scary face of U.S. foreign policy. If it weren't such a bad farce, it would be funny. Congress must not back up Obama, which they did not. The political dynamic is suddenly shifting away from the acceptance of Obama's incompetent presidential authority. The latest revised story by the mainstream media is that Obama decided to substitute his military strike authority to Congress. Well, a subordinate, rather, his military strike authority to Congress. However, since he had no support from his aggressive stance against Syria from his traditional European allies, and 90% of all Americans in the military opposed to attacking Syria, Obama had to correct his tyrannical approach with his military and awkwardly pass the responsibility, okay, of attacking Syria to Congress. Well, Obama is not fooling anyone with this deception. Today, Kerry and Hagel will be presenting their case for attacking Syria to Congress. I look forward to seeing what the Congress will do. Hopefully, they will have the good sense of not approving the attack. But 90% of the American people have no faith in Congress, and rightly so. Congress has betrayed Americans continually and have no intention of stopping as long as Americans allow them to steal from them, lie to them, and push them into endless wars around the planet. And I wrote this on September 3rd. Now, when's the last time you heard anything about Syria, folks? Right. Nobody's talking about Syria. Now, on September 3rd, same day, something interesting happened. I couldn't believe it. I had like 1,200 page views on my website. And I was trying to figure out where they were coming from. And I did an IP address check and so on. I found where it was, and I was, like, so surprised. It was an NSA blocked out website and so on and so forth, Interpol and all that crap. And it just surprised me. And I wrote this letter, this post in retaliation to all the incredible surveillance that was happening to my own site by certain head. You know, I found out that it wasn't an international, national spy organization, government organization that was reading my site. But anyway, I wrote it for spy guys and spy girls. So on September 3rd. I never wanted to be a spy or an intelligence agent or even a cop. To me, it would put such a damper on my life if I had to spend 8 hours or more a day reading websites like mine or offer it free or other free thinkers who question their government's involvement and rationale for screwing everyone and going to war with everyone, including their own people. I always wonder what kind of qualifications spies must have to become spies. Edward Snowden was a high school dropout, but he obviously had talents that got him his highly paid, highly classified job other than a high school or college degree. I have to laugh at some of the suspicious things I've noticed about spies. They might be very smart people, but they must live ultra-strange lives. Why would someone want to spend their life searching for bad guys? I would prefer spending my life looking for good guys. I suppose their work is vital to the nation's security and all that patriotic police stuff, but if anyone is wasting federal time and being paid by the government to spy on me, they're really wasting their time and the government is getting fleeced for paying them. I suspect that if any spy guy or spy girl is spying on me, they are probably justifying it more for their amusement. I guess I don't really mind being spied on because everything I have to say about politics or politicians or whatever is important and happening around the world, I want to support it and talk about it. I'm an open book to spies. I have a Facebook account, a Twitter account, an internet radio program, a website. Hell, virtually everything someone wants to know about me is publicly accessible. I used to have over 100,000 results on Google, but since last year they changed their algorithms and I'm down to about 15,000 to 20,000 results, and tons of my stuff have been cached on Google. This website is registered on over 40 search engines worldwide. To be private about what I do and say and think would defeat my goal, which is to make my opinions in public as public as possible and for everyone in the world to hear and read. When I first got into broadcasting and writing, I was a little sensitive about being criticized or insulted by a listener or a reader. But after 14 years of this, it doesn't bother me anymore. My audiences of readers and listeners have grown substantially over these years, and I accept the fact that my work interests many people and may alarm some people. But my goal is and always has been to express myself boldly and present my opinions, news, and facts as much and as often as I can. I have almost 900 posts on this website and 1,000 archive radio shows on Blog Talk Radio, LA Steel Show, ORG. All on different topics, music, art, history, politics, metaphysics, news, philosophy. When I stop enjoying what I'm doing, will be the day I stop doing it. So spy guys and spy girls, keep on spying. And while you are spying, I hope you are enjoying my website and share it with your friends. Yes, folks. That's what I'm hoping. But anyway, I so enjoyed that. I'm going to, let me go forward, on and forward, yes, so up until the current. Oh, here's something interesting. And something a little personal. On September 4th, I had an uncle that passed away on September 3rd. His name was Dick. And the family called him Uncle Dick. But, yeah, he was a priest, and he was kind of a weird dude. But it took me a little bit to understand this guy. But I think it's important that I talk about him, only because, in the sense of what I wrote, you know. And, I don't know. It was kind of interesting to write it. And it's some credit to the guy, but it's more a realistic look at his life, you know. And maybe too personal to read, but I don't know. The guy's dead, and hey, you know, here it is. Uncle Dick. Dick was my father's brother. I didn't agree with him on most of his philosophical beliefs. However, I felt sorry for him. He always tried to disguise his homosexuality and would on occasion act manly. He took me out for my first legal drink on my 18th birthday. He went to a hotel lounge, you know, in my hometown where a belly dancer was performing. I laughed hysterically when a woman came out on stage. Dick was more surprised than I was. The belly dancer was a homely, heavyset woman in her mid-40s with a stretch mark, sagging belly. She danced around the room of drunken men and came over to our table and shook her belly at us. I spilled my beer on the floor. Dick blushed in embarrassment and shook his head and said, "Oh, no!" And when she danced in front of us, we both laughed and finished our drinks and had a second drink and left the hotel. As he drove me home, I thanked him for taking me and laughed when he said, "You might want to tell your mother, if she asks, that we just sat at the bar and had a beer." And I agreed. Dick remained single his entire life and seemed content with his single status. After working for years as a counselor in a naval prison, a high school teacher, working summers as an immigration officer, Dick took a very spiritual turn. He decided to enter a Catholic seminary in his early 40s to study for the priesthood. But Dick was a well-educated man and took his studies seriously. However, I always wondered what convinced him to enter the priesthood. He said he had an epiphany. Well, I never understood his sudden devotion to Catholicism, but it was an approved lifestyle and career for homosexuals. I struggled with Dick's decision of becoming a priest. I could never see myself lying face down on the church floor in front of an altar the way Dick did with other initiates during his ordination ceremony. But Dick had no problem with it. It seemed to me to be a lot easier than what some of my friends went through in basic training. It was a career choice. He never tried to convert me to Catholicism, maybe because he knew me well enough to know I had a low tolerance to establish religion. My spiritual journey was self-directed, focused on truth and mysticism. We seldom discussed religion when we went. As the Catholic Church scandal has increased over the years, his resistance to questions or criticism of the Church became more stolid. I knew he was having a crisis of faith, if he ever had faith, as were many of his friends in the church, but it was impossible for him to deny the obvious. I questioned him once about what his thoughts were regarding the pedophile scandal, and he became angry and squinted at me and replied, "Oh, scandals, I hate scandals, I don't talk about scandals." I laughed at him and said, "Is that how you answer the question?" His face turned red with anger as he replied, "I don't want to talk about it. If you continue, I'll leave. I'll leave." I kept silent on the subject and never brought it up again. Dick served the church for 3 decades as an assistant pastor in a city diocese, as chaplain in an all-girls college, and as a pastor of 2 small parishes. He seemed happy with his mission. Dick recently lost his fight with cancer. I spoke with him when he first entered the hospice. He was in good humor and sounded strong and tried to convince me and himself that it was only an issue of his medication and he might be back home in a week. I called him again the next week and spoke to him for the last time. He had failed quickly and his voice was very weak. He could hardly say a word. As I heard him say, "I'm sorry. I can't talk. I'm so weak. So weak. I'm sorry." I said, "It's okay. You're well. Goodbye." Those are the last words I would ever say to him. He passed away a few days later. You know, it's hard to look at this guy and hard to figure out people sometimes after the time. But, you know, hey, what can I tell you? You know, it's what people do. But, you know, after, you know, knowing a person for all your life, and you see the changes they went through and understand what they did, you kind of, and their relationship to you, you kind of understand them, and you just go, oh, God, you know, thank God that wasn't me, and I pray to God that I didn't live that way, I didn't have to go through those cycles or whatever you did, you know. And, you know, for the grace of God, go on. And that's how I've always felt about him. And you can read that article on my website if you want. Really kind of fascinating what happened this month. It's amazing. I've created a website of forgotten. It's already gone, you know? And that's why if you go through my site and you'll see that every month of every year up until 2004, on November of 2004 when this site was established, you'll see things that are, and read things that you might remember and jar your memory and go, oh, I remember that. I remember when this happened. I remember that. I remember that. It's all news. It's all views. And in my book, Naked at the Mic, I documented so much of the stuff that happened and explained what happened during those years. Everybody's forgotten, you know, the Bush years and the beginning Obama years. And, oh, my God, all the hell and creation that happened during those periods of time. I studied it. I was working with it. I was interviewing these people. I was on radio, FM radio and Internet radio. And all these interviews are archived on the site. God, if people could only research it, they would find out so much information. But I continue to go. And I've got a little skit here that was on YouTube. And for those of you, it's very, very, very funny. And John Stewart is a very funny guy. But he said, but in this, explains the U.S.-Syria operation, just the tip, the operation. Hilarious. It's a hilarious comedy skit. And I'd like to play this way tonight. Oh, too bad. It was removed. Oh, too bad. Must have been getting too many hits. Okay, I had to put it in there. Very, very funny. But I was taken off. Oh, because it offended Obama so much. You know, he got too much criticism for it. Well, anyway, here it is. That was on September 6th. It's too bad that it was taken off. This is Obama's last stand. On September 8th, I wrote this. This was before Obama's speech that he gave on Syria. No one wants to listen to Obama. No one wants to see him. No one believes him, and no one wants him as president anymore. His Israeli buddies are now swarming Congress like rats to lobby for war. But most Americans can't stand Israel. Many Jewish Americans support Israel, but not a war with Syria that would cause Israel to be destroyed. Israel will be sacrificed for the oil fields in Iran. Israel has outlived its usefulness for the New World Order. Israeli leaders must be insane to advocate a military strike against Syria. If Israel is so committed to war with Syria and the rest of the Middle East, then let them go to war and keep America out of it. I would rather see Israel defeated and destroyed by their own insanity than lose one U.S. soldier in a needless fight with Syria. Americans now see the uselessness and danger of our alliance with Israel. If Obama strikes Syria, Americans will hate Israel even more than they do now. Israeli leaders may think they own the American government, but they have no idea how little loyalty to Israel most Americans feel, and how much their Zionist congressmen are truly hated by the American people. Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, John McCain, and a host of other traitorous, warmongering New World Order puppet senators and congressmen will find themselves scorned and under siege by their constituents and all of the American people. liars, contemptible hypocrites, and warmongering murderers. Obama and these creatures from the lagoon of slimy politicians are snarling and growling at the American people and their world opponents. The next 2 days will be the end of the Obama administration and the end of political careers of any politician that supports him. Russia, China, and Iran have stated they will attack U.S. warships, and Iran has threatened to destroy Tel Aviv and declare war on Israel if Obama attacks Syria. The U.S. is broke, its military is exhausted, and its generals and commanders are incompetent. There are no countries who support Obama other than Israel and Saudi Arabia, two of the most racist and murderous countries in the Middle East. The entire U.S. military is against fighting in Syria. Egypt and Iran have threatened to close off the Suez Canal and Straits of Hormuz. There has never been such a hatred by the American people for a president or Congress. Tuesday night will be President Obama's final speech ever listened to by the American people. His stupidity and arrogance will be witnessed by all Americans and people around the world. He looks like a fool already for asking the American people to support him in striking Syria without honest evidence or reason. He will ask the American people to take sides in Syria with Al-Qaeda on 9/10/13, one day before the anniversary of the attack on the World Trade Center. Obama's idiocy is absurd. It is insane. If Congress approves this attack, it will be a revolution in the United States and against governments around the world. Hold on, people. Let us wait until Tuesday night to watch the total political demise of Barack Obama or beginning of World War III. And I wrote this on September 8th. Yes, folks. Now let's see what happened on the following days. On September 8th, or 9th rather, which was a day later, Barack Obama's farewell speech to the American people. This kind of a little satire. I made up a speech here, but this is basically what the speech is going to almost what it relayed. Good evening, my fellow Americans. I have come before you on the eve of this 12th anniversary of 9/11 to ask you to support me in an attack against Syria. Our intelligence agencies have proven that Assad, the president of Syria, has launched chemical weapons against his own people. I know you are aware of the hearings before the Senate and what a lousy job Secretary of State Kerry did presenting the evidence I bring before you tonight. But before I say anything further, let me have you watch the YouTube videos we were presented with last week that convinced me and my cabinet that President Assad attacked his own people with chemical weapons. And then he presents. Now, the video evidence that he stated, it proved out to be a staged, phony crap. Okay, there was no evidence. There wasn't real evidence. Okay. It was put together by CIA. Now you have seen for yourself what happened. I understand that 90% of Americans don't want to attack Syria, but I really don't care. It is my ass on the line here and my credibility. I didn't have to ask Congress or the American people for permission to attack Syria, and I still don't. I'm asking you, the American people, because I thought it was a good idea and that I didn't think you would mind me getting us into another war. Well, I guess I misunderestimated the American people and Congress. But hey, you voted for me to office for a second term, so I figured you liked me and where I was taking this country. Listen up, America. I'm defending the people of Syria, and yes, I admit they are some al-Qaeda forces working with the rebels, but that is irrelevant to why I want to attack Syria. President Assad was bad for using chemical weapons against the people, and all bad guys must be punished, right? So here I am standing before you tonight to ask for your support in attacking Syria. Our Navy is deployed, and ready to strike Syria as soon as I give the order. It will be a precision missile targeted strike to destroy Syrian chemical weapons stashes, and is intended to do the least amount of collateral damage to the civilian population. So I conclude tonight's message to the American people by reminding them of my famous campaign words, "Yes, I can. I can strike Syria, and I will, regardless of your approval." Night, and may God bless me. Barack H. Obama, POTUS, President of the U.S. Well, folks, oddly enough, that same day, you may or may not remember, but on September 9th, which is less than a month ago, the Russians backed down from their threat. And I say Russians backed down, and Putin is a putz. It was all theatrics, like Putin wrestling a trained bear. A deal has been made with Syria by the Russians that Syria would hand over all of its chemical weapons to international control. I'm disappointed with the big bad Putin for giving in to the big bad Kerry and big bad Obama. I guess they are all controlled by the New World Order bankers and butlers and bozos. I was looking forward to the Middle East finally standing up to the U.S. and its allies and maybe kicking the Western interest out of the Middle East for good. But hey, everyone, this way saves face and averts World War III. But it isn't over yet. The big badass Obama may want to still attack Syria because that was his plan all along. But the Russians put it put up a roadblock. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few days, and hopefully we can avoid the horror of another Obama speech. I never thought Obama could be more disliked in his own country than G.W. Bush. Every speech G.W. Bush made was an insult to his audience. With Obama, every speech he makes is a lie and a deception. Everything he says has the stain of hypocrisy. Oh, well. It was fun watching Putin punch out Obama over Snowden and Syria. But I guess all of it was political theater. It always is. The only difference in this theatrical production was that the actors seemed more realistic than other productions the world has witnessed. But there might still be hope for the remnants of G.W. Bush's administration, who are still advising Obama to conquer all Middle East countries. Iran and Syria were the last two they needed for full balance of the Middle East. Also, interestingly enough, they are the two surviving Middle Eastern countries that are not under IMF and Rothschild World Banking monopoly. Wow. Huh. But Obama hasn't accepted the Russian-Syrian proposal yet. He may be stupid enough not to, or may be told not to by his New World Order puppet masters and playwrights. It has happened. If that happens, the curtain will fall on Act 1 and rise again on Act 2 of the punishment of Syria and the ass-kicking of Obama. Oh, yeah. Well, 3 days later, Vladimir Putin wrote a New York Times op-ed that crucified that made Obama look like an idiot, and the United States pretty much, and the Syrian op-ed. But let me read that to you. That was on September 12th. I'll say, Putin's New York Times op-ed made so much sense. I don't know if anybody read it, but I have it linked up online. Putin's New York Times op-ed made so much sense that is why the American Congress hates it. I called Putin a putz recently because I believe he backed down and gave Obama a way out of his stupid claim of attacking Syria. But Obama is far too arrogant to accept the help without biting the hand that helped him. Why would Syria want to give up its chemical weapons without assurances that the U.S. will cease its support of the rebels and also continue its threat of attack against Syria if Syria agrees to chemical disarmament. The U.S. leadership is such a joke that Putin can use the New York Times, a CIA-controlled newspaper, to attack U.S. foreign policy and the incompetence of the U.S. leadership. If you read the op-ed, you will be amazed at the common sense of Mr. Putin's logic. With regards to Syria and his serious warning of what has happened in other countries in the U.S. and the Middle East, and the U.S. has militarily occupied. The U.S. has failed in every situation by using aggressive force in the Middle East and ignoring international law. He simply reminds the U.S. leadership that a diplomatic resolution to the Syria problem is far more sensible and rational than the threat of a military attack. I found it interesting how he ended the article quoting Obama on his speech regarding U.S. Exceptionalism. Obama made this speech on September 10th. The following is the paragraph of his op-ed. I thought Putin was an atheist, but this might have been a Putin put-down of the hypocrisy of the American Christian virtue, racist history, and historical aggression and war against Muslim nations. And I quote, "In my working and personal relationship with President Obama is marked by growing trust. I appreciate this. I carefully studied his address to the nation on Tuesday, and I would rather disagree with a case that he made on American exceptionalism, stating that the United States policy is what makes America different. It is what makes us exceptional. It is extremely dangerous to encourage people to see themselves as exceptional, whatever the motivation. There are big countries and small countries, rich and poor, those with long democratic traditions and those with still finding their way to democracy. Their policies differ too. We are all different, but when we ask for the Lord's blessing, we must not forget that God created us equal." I enjoyed this article. And you can go to my website and you can get a link to it. To the actual New York Times op-ed. I wrote that on September 12th. I got quite a few more articles that I wrote that I wanted to get to, but this is something. I don't know if anybody saw the Obama twerks the nation. Now that's what Miley Cyrus did, her twerking thing. Okay, but Obama has been twerking the American people since he was elected. He has virtually accomplished nothing of historical significance other than expand wars, threaten illegal attacks against sovereign nations, shred the U.S. Constitution, and plummet the economy into an unrecoverable depression. Recent polls show a true rate of unemployment in the U.S. at 36%. U.S. debt has been downgraded for the first time in history. I am sick and tired of Obama shaking his ass at the American people. Obama's twerking has been going on long before Miley Cyrus made the action of twerking famous. Obama is a twerker, if there ever was one. All he's done since he's been in office is drop his pants to the American public and moon the American people and people around the world. So get off stage, Obama. You've embarrassed America and yourself enough. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to a little something metaphysical here. Living, let's call the living. Living is an individual experience. It isn't fair or just. It doesn't make any sense, and everyone has a different life experience. There are some common elements to everyone's life. However, those revolve around the basic needs of food, clothing, and shelter. Our family lives are different. Our jobs are different. Our needs and ambitions are different. Living is something we all do differently. Living is the creation of someone's reality, created by natural forces or imagined. We create our own or react to someone else's reality. The recent disaster, the Colorado floods, and the wildfires that destroyed so much of California recently has caused a drastic and cataclysmic change to the lives of many American people. Their realities have been shattered by natural disasters. Fukushima fallout has affected the quality of life everywhere in Japan and is affecting human life and sea life throughout the Pacific Ocean and coastal countries. Can anyone in the world create a reality safe from environmental disasters or illness or death? Is it possible to determine our fate to such an extent that we have complete control of our destinies? Every reader of these words is safe in a reality that affords them the time and tools to read these words. They are creating their reality every second and minute of the day. They are living in a reality that allows them time to act rather than react and formulate their lives in ways they want to be them to be. They are courageous, genuine, intelligent, and analytical. They live in 151 countries and 3,600 cities, creating their lives daily and bringing others into their lives. Through working, teaching, parenting, loving, guiding, and creating, they are the threads of life pull the fabric of the world together. Our vision of the world is the one we live in. What's significant about this article is not only that you live, you know, your own reality, but that particular day, I was confounded. I was amazed by my web stats that for the entire year. That showed that I was visited by 151 countries and over 3,600 cities, you know, worldwide cities, one in the last 12 months. And I had over almost 500,000 visitors. Just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. And I thank you so much for listening and reading and coming to it and obviously spreading the word. But I appreciate I appreciate my audience. I just want to thank you for being there. This is a couple more poems, actually. Now, does anybody remember the D.C. massacre that happened on September 17th? Is another government attack to ban guns in America? What kind of imbecile is in charge of the D.C. Naval Yard security? Who could be so stupid to allow security clearance to a man who is discharged from the Navy for mental illness issues and allow him to enter a secured area with an assault rifle and two loaded pistols? And go into a building where 3,000 people were working? The stupidity or insanity of all in charge of the security system in the D.C. Naval Yard rivals anything the Keystone Cops or the Three Stooges would have done as Naval Yard security. What imbeciles were placed in charge of the D.C. Naval Yard security, and what morons are allowed to be security guards there? It does make much more intelligent. It doesn't take much more intelligence than a zombie has to notice someone carrying an assault rifle into work and wonder what he needs it for. With all the security being imposed on office buildings and security around the country being mandated by cities and towns, the military and federal government have obviously been sleeping for the last year, or they just don't care, or they planned this assault as another excuse to ban assault weapons and disarm the American people. There is no excuse for such a farce of security, and there is no excuse for the families of those who died, other than the Naval Yard security morons are liable for their murders. negligent homicide at least, criminal insanity and life imprisonment at best, or planned murder by the government. After the murders of Fort Hood, many military facility should have been had the highest degree of security, not the least as did the D.C. Naval Yard. Old women and wheelchair-bound veterans are being strip-searched at airports by TSA terrorists, and yet a known mentally disturbed man who's walked into a guarded military area like the Naval Yard with three weapons on him without being questioned. What is wrong with this picture? Is this another Obama-ordered CIA MK-Ultra-inspired assassination like Sandy Hook and Fort Hood? It doesn't make sense unless it isn't supposed to. It doesn't make sense unless it was supposed to happen. Suddenly, a busload of Sandy Hook parents are headed to D.C. to lobby for gun control. This isn't just a coincidence. Folks, I don't know about you, but that's an old story, and it only happened 2 weeks ago. Isn't that amazing? Nobody gives a goddamn. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Huh? Amazing, huh? An amazing guy. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the works of Terence McKenna, but he was a very brilliant speaker and thinker. And he said, he made a quote that said, "The artist's tasks." And I quoted it. It's on my site. It says, "The artist's task is to save the soul of mankind. And anything less is a dithering while Rome burns. If artists cannot find a way, then the way cannot be found." That statement inspired me to this day. Now, on September 19th, our illustrious Senator John McCain, the great idiot statesman, wrote a letter to Pravda.ru in response to the op-ed by in the New York Times by President Putin of Russia. And I wrote this article after I read his insane remarks to Pravda. And it's called "Dear Mr. Pravda.ru" by Senator John McCain. I have quoted three consecutive paragraphs as they appear from John McCain's article published today on 9/19/13 in Pravda.ru and added Obama's name in parentheses next to Putin's and U.S. next to Russia to show the hypocrisy of McCain's statements and how closely his complaints against Putin's leadership reflect the truth about Obama's leadership of the U.S. John McCain is an unabashed Zionist Israeli shill who has been given millions of dollars by Israeli lobbyists and military contractors for his political campaigns and represents few Americans except the military-industrial complex. His history is one of fraud, greed, incompetence, and treason, yet he is still considered by many people in the U.S. and around the world and in the Republican Party as a spokesman for the American people. He has been an embarrassment to all intelligent Americans his entire life and is the all-American idiot. He has gained his wealth and status by inheritance, marriage, and corruption, not by personal skill or talent. Madman McCain's personal history and sickening hypocrisy makes his words worthless to any reader except a political farce, as political farce and satire. Russia and Putin have many issues and problems, but Russia isn't any more hypocritical than the U.S. And in the case of Syria, Putin is a far more responsible world leader and diplomat than Obama is. And John McCain retains his world status as America's idiot statesman. The following three paragraphs are from McCain's article in Pravda.ru. President Putin. President Obama claims his purpose is to restore Russia, or the U.S., to greatness at home and among the nations of the world. But by what measure has he restored our greatness? He has given you an economy that is based almost entirely on a few natural resources that will rise and fall with those commodities. His riches will not last, and while they do, they will be mostly in the possession of corrupt and powerful few. Doesn't this sound like Obama and the United States? The capital is fleeing Russia, also fleeing the U.S., which, lacking rule of law and broad-based economy, is considered too risky for investment and entrepreneurism. That sounds like the United States, doesn't it? He has given you a political system that is sustained by corruption and repression and isn't strong enough to tolerate dissent. The same way with Obama. How has he strengthened Russia's or U.S. international stature? By aligning Russia with the United States with some of the world's most offensive and threatening tyrannies, by supporting a Syrian regime that is murdering tens of thousands of its own people to remain in power, and by blocking the United Nations from even condemning its atrocities. Sounds just like the United States. By refusing to consider the massacre of innocents, the plight of millions of refugees, the growing prospect of a conflagration that engulfs other countries and its flame inappropriate subjects for the world attention. Sounds exactly like the United States and Obama, doesn't it? He is not enhancing Russia's U.S. global reputation. It's not enhancing Russia's reputation. But at the same time, Obama is not enhancing the U.S. reputation. He is destroying it. He has made it a friend to tyrants and enemies to the oppressed and entrusted by nations that seek to build a safer, more peaceful, and prosperous world. He's saying the exact same thing. He's accusing Putin here of the crimes and hypocrisy that is Obama and the United States policies. President Putin, Obama, in quotes, I quote, don't believe in these values because they don't believe in you. He doesn't believe that human nature at liberty can rise above its weaknesses and build just, peaceful, prosperous societies, or at least doesn't believe Russians can. So he rules by using those weaknesses, by corruption, repression, and violence. He rules for himself and not you. Now these were the statements of John McCain to the Russian people. And he's such an idiot. He's such a fool. He's such a joke. Such a hypocritical douchebag. Okay, that he can't see what he's writing is exactly the same problem we have here in this country, what he's accusing Putin of, I can easily accuse Obama of. And Obama has been accused of everything that McCain has accused Putin of. So, you know, it's just proof that McCain is a stupid, stupid, stupid man. Held up by, God knows, by his wife. Yes. God knows he didn't have any brains. We got a couple of minutes here left, and I wanted to read the last ones here. I wrote a poem on the 26th of September. It's called The Inevitable. It goes, the inevitable is the anger of betrayal, a baby's cry, a politician lies. Doors are open, windows are closed. It rains in spring and winter is cold. Love abandons hate, the stone is hard, fire is hot, the feather is cold, soft. Loneliness is lonely, laughter brings joy. All die who are born, souls transcend. And I'll end with another poem that I wrote tonight, recently. I got 1 minute here. See if I can find it. Yeah. I got a bunch of more that I wrote. One called Obama Healthcare. One called The Shutdown, The Whipping of America. And I'll just finish. Time is up now, but if you're listening, but I would like to finish with another poem that I wrote today, published. It's called The Following the Wrong Dream, a poem about the shutdown. Americans following the wrong dream is not a happy dream. It's a bad dream that will lead us to ruin. The American dream is not a happy one anymore, because it is unattainable to many more than before. It is now only attainable if you are a bankster, illegal alien, or a corporate whore. Honest dreams of wealth and fame are no longer the dreams of Americans. Now Americans dream of keeping their homes and having enough food to feed their own. Let the rockets glare and bombs burst in the air. For millions of Americans, the American dream is gone. Strike up the drums, strike up the band, give Congress and the President a big hand, shutting down the government and destroying the dreams of millions of Americans. And with that, folks, I'll leave you tonight. And I want to thank everybody for joining me. And, hopefully, join me next week on Tuesday night. Lyle and I will give you some more news. Have a good night, folks. Good weekend.